The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
In the old days, not so long ago, madmen were packed onto boats and shipped off to sea. They were said to be searching for their lost sanity. They called these boats the Ship of Fools. And for a long time, we thought we were the same ones left behind on dry land. But what if we're not? What if so much time has passed that we've forgotten the truth? That we are, in fact, the fools, afloat on an endless sea. Pretending to be normal.
Welcome to the Desert of the Real. My name is Miguel Connor, and I am your pompous of gnosis. I hope you're writing your own gospel and living your own myth. I hope you're running with those searching for the truth and avoiding those who have found it. And today, for all you young dudes, barring from Mott the Hoople, written by David Bowie, this is a show I'm very excited about that will be very helpful and is certainly aligned with the ethos of Aeon Byte. So we have the pleasure today of being joined by Dr. Whoa, we got that echo here. Might be a computer. Oh, we've lost Ed. No worries. He'll get back on it. Again, the Mercury retrograde has been hitting me for the last month. It's supposed to be over. It was supposed to be intense with those Virgo risings, and it's been hitting me, God, even when it's over. But we continue, as Churchill said, when you're in hell, keep going. And Ed's book certainly talks about that too. So hopefully he will be able to join us back. As far as housekeeping, we got a lot of exciting shows. This Friday, we will be going back to Jung. We'll be talking about the shadow. We'll talk about simulation and other very Gnostic ideas. Next week, we got a lot of shows. We've got Aki Sederberg will be coming back to discuss the Cathars. Let's see if he can join us again. But as I was saying, we have shows. Aki Sederberg will come to discuss his travels through Europe, and he will discuss the Cathars and other mystical portal places in Europe. So excited about that. We will have a show on mysticism and Gnosticism from a very prominent scholar. And as always, David Block will join us for a new trilogy of the Left Hand Path. So don't miss it. All right, Ed, you keep disappearing. What's wrong?
Well, either the invisible powers are playing with us, or we're having significant global technology challenges, which we've all been having for months now.
For years.
I think I'm here and we're good now. I don't know what happened. I was not on YouTube or anything else on my end, but doesn't matter. Our time is precious. Let's use it.
Let's use it. Yes, yes. We carry on because that's the best we can do despite what they throw at us. Yes. So why don't we talk about you? It seems your journey began with this collective psychic wound that has never really healed called the Vietnam War. Tell us about that. Seems to be a sort of origin story for you.
Regarding our work in the spiritual traditions, it's not my origin story, but thank you. And I do really appreciate your recognition and the honor I get for working with veterans. I do want our friends and our audience to know that while that's probably where my biggest contribution and reputation is, I don't only work with veterans, and I don't only work with Vietnamese, with not Vietnamese, well, the Vietnamese, American veterans of the Vietnam War. So I have been working with veterans and with healing of military and violent trauma since the Vietnam War. The end of the Vietnam War was in 1975. I began working with our veterans right after that, before post-traumatic stress disorder was even recognized as a diagnosis, which happened in 1980. Briefly to relate it to our work here, after working with Vietnam veterans, that population for a decade or more, I realized that the wound we call PTSD today is massive. It is to the body, the mind, the heart, the soul, to society, to the whole planet. We all share that wound. The veterans and the survivors of trauma are the ones who are manifesting it, but we all have it. We all have it. I didn't have to serve in the Vietnam War, but I have profound wounds from not serving. And I did begin working with veterans as my alternative service that I would have given if I had been a conscientious objector, but I didn't have to. But I still wanted to, and I wanted to give some form of healing service to our country that in my eyes would count as my initiation, my rite of passage into manhood. Okay, all of that. After a decade of working with the veterans, I realized these are soul wounds. These wounds are so deep and so comprehensive that they need to be addressed on a spiritual and a holistic and a communal plane, not just in individual or group psychology, and certainly not casting the traumatic wound as psychopathology. You've got mental illness, you're messed up, the rest of us are okay. Not true. Since that time and ongoing now, I have been researching war wounding and its healing from ancient times to the present. I go all the way back to the Epic of Gilgamesh, which also has what we would call PTSD and moral injury. Mm-hmm. But that's 4,000 years old.
Yeah.
So from Gilgamesh and the Bible and Homer and the world mythology regarding and spirituality regarding warrior traditions, we see that what we call traumatic wounding is inevitable. It happens to everyone. And other cultures and other times and places have had far greater wisdom and practices for healing it, and including the Greek tradition, which I don't use exclusively, but I specialize in. Connecting that to our topic today and to my book, Soul Medicine, and the healing work I do in Greece, as you indicated to our audience, thank you. I do bring veterans to Greece on psycho-spiritual journeys, on cultural immersion journeys, and with the Greeks and in their tradition, using mythology, using their original spirituality, meeting with Greek warriors in the present, going to warrior sites in the past, practicing a full immersion into Greek culture and everything it carries. So spirituality, it's history, it's philosophy, meeting the Greek people today who are carrying the tradition. We deeply immerse in, now we can get to our Jungian and neo-Jungian work together, we deeply immerse in the mythology, in the archetypal traditions of warfare, of warriorhood, and of traumatic service and of healing service. We use Greek tragedies, which were all written by their warriors, and they were communal healing rituals for the scourge of war for the entire society. We use philosophy. We go to the warrior sites. We make them relevant today. So, for example, last year I took a warrior group to Marathon, where the Greeks stopped the Persians, and then Thermopylae, where the 300 Spartans fell, resisting the Persians. We take modern warriors there. We ask modern warriors, was your service of a Marathon, did you really believe it was absolutely necessary and in defense of our country? And if so, claim that. And if not, what was it instead? Thermopylae, we ask the same questions of everybody, not just the warriors, but where would you take your ultimate last stand? What do you value so highly that you would give your life for it? And for the veterans, did you feel that way? Well, when you went into the service, when you're next to your battle buddies, afterwards, when you thought about and reviewed what you did and why, does it match? So we go very deeply into the moral and spiritual dimensions. Another piece of many in Greece is that in the Greek pantheon, we remember they had two deities of war. There was Ares, the god of war, who was a berserker. He loved it. Homer called him the god who delights in slaughter.
Yeah.
So we can laugh at that, but really, buddy, some people join the military because they want the experience of fighting to the death. They want to know what it's like to kill somebody. That's Ares.
Mm-hmm.
Athena was a goddess of war. She was a protector. She was strategic. She was compassionate. She tried to use diplomacy and only resorted to arms only in defense and only as a last resort. Of course, in American culture, we have both going on all the time, and we've been dominated by Ares. And
indeed.
So warriors, young people who go into the military wanting to serve and protect like Athena are conditioned and trained to be like Ares. No, no, no. Kill at an instant's notice. Kill on by order. Don't think. Don't feel. Just react. So what we call post-traumatic stress disorder today is, from the mythological perspective, possession by Ares. That's a distorted, that's the shadow warrior. That's the violence and that darkness and that hatred that's in all of us, but that is reinforced and comes out fiercely in the war setting. And we need to work together to end your possession by Ares, the distorted warrior archetype. And you're not going to be a civilian again. You can't be. You have to develop an enlarged spiritual warrior identity. So you leave Ares and you go to Athena. You give up being berserk. You give up dominating people by force. Just this morning, I was working with a man who is a veteran of the British Royal Marines Special Forces. Just this morning, we've been working together for about a year. I said, I've done it. I'm no longer possessed by Ares. I've become calm. I respond to people with empathy and compassion and persuasion rather than power and rage and dominate them. So he successfully has transferred his archetypal identity from Ares, the raging warrior, to Athena, the protectress, the compassionate protectress. And when we do that, PTSD can heal. We grow our soul deeper and bigger with the using the archetypes, as you do with many traditions, such that the traumatic wound shrinks in proportion to the depth and richness of the soul life we're living. And so then we're always warriors, but we can carry the wound and it's contained in a larger elder identity.
Beautifully said. Yeah, as Jung said, we can't defeat our complexes. We can merely outgrow them. And yeah, I love your ideas on healing. Like you say in your book, you agree with Jung, your job is not to cure neurosis, but to have people have contact with the numinous, the higher worlds of the archetypes and their images. That's where the transformation really, really happens. And again, you in your book, Ed, you quote Jung saying, you know, the gods have been replaced by mental diseases. And that's, it's, the game is still there. And the idea of healing is, yeah, beautiful. Again, this has happened in so many traditions. I mean, the Buddha said, the baby cries because it is wise. The Buddhas were very focused on the trauma. Just being born is traumatic. I mean, yes. Look at our babies and animals. Living is traumatic. The Gnostics, of course, were all about healing. And you see it in their books. And they do spells. And they have, like, therapy groups. And, of course, their ideas were, yeah, cosmic. We were thrown into this world. What are we going to do? But to understand what you're doing and what we need to do, I think it's important to understand the idea of trauma and PTSD. I think I love what Richard Levine, the trauma specialist, says. It's the tyranny of the past. It's that wound that we get that will not heal. And we think time will heal our wounds. And if I change my behavior, it'll be fine. But no, trauma stays with you. It is inside of you. It's, I guess you would say, it's a complex that gets created, the splinter that invades us and takes over our ego. That's why these soldiers will suddenly go crazy because they've been taken over. But like you said, this complex, this Aries has taken over and they start shooting places up or doing drugs. So would you agree that trauma, we must understand trauma and that, like you said at the beginning, each of us is traumatized in some way, has some sort of complex. That's how we approach it.
Yeah, I fully agree with everything you just shared, and I'd like to gloss on it, so make it bigger together. Yeah. One matter is, yes, Gnosticism, yes, Buddhism, and actually, yes, ancient Greek philosophy all taught us that we know everything on the other side when our souls are in the cosmos and they're pure and coming into the world and the birth experience itself and falling out of the invisible or the spiritual and into the material is profoundly traumatic. And those traditions teach us we had the spiritual wisdom, but because of the trauma, we've forgotten it and we have to relearn it and regain it. And so Greek philosophy teaches the same thing. Okay. The word trauma itself is an ancient Greek word, even spelled the way we spell it, but pronounced travma in Greek. The original definition of a trauma in the ancient world was an experience that penetrated our soul. And it was used for physical trauma as we use it today. You're stabbed with a knife. If you're in a car accident, if you're shot, that's a trauma.
Yeah.
However, today, you and I are crusading against breaking the world into pieces. In the ancient world, the word trauma was applied to body, mind, heart, spirit, things, communities, groups. So anytime we are pierced by the violence of the world in any way, we are traumatized. And as you said, Miguel, and it's true, those experiences are so deeply penetrating. They go to our core. They go to our core. And here's one powerful demonstration of that. My father-in-law was a World War II veteran. He was never in combat. He was in the Army Engineers. So he was in the second line across Europe, bless him, cleaning up the mess after the battles. After Europe, the European war ended, he was shipped to Japan for the invasion. Mm-hmm. And he expected he would be an invasion force and in combat. While he was being shipped over, we dropped the bombs. He reports that almost everybody on the troop ship were laughing and singing and drinking beer and celebrating because the war's over. We don't have to go. However, he wasn't. He said, I don't know what happened, but something awful happened and countless Japanese just died. So I'm safe, but I'm not sure this is a time to celebrate. Okay. He got to Japan in the Army Engineers. His unit was bivouacked about 5 miles from Hiroshima. He went through many times. He brought back photos. He had to leave college to go serve in the military. He would have graduated in 1945, but he couldn't because he was in the military. To the last day of his life, he used to wear a cap from his college with 45 on it. Because he said, nah, not college, the war. And Hiroshima was my real education.
Wow.
All right. He just died about a year ago at age 96. He stayed clear-minded until the end. He did become senile the last 6 months or so of his life. Memories disappeared one by one by one. So he didn't remember my wife anymore, his daughter. He didn't remember his other daughters. He finally didn't remember his wife, and they had been married for 65 years. The one, and this is the trauma lesson for all of us. The one and only thing he remembered was Hiroshima. And the last months of his life, that's all he would talk about. I was at Hiroshima. I was at Hiroshima. I got to tell you what it looked like. There was nothing left. Everybody. That was it. That shows how deeply trauma penetrates. That was his one remaining memory at the end of a lifetime of 96 years. And that's what he wanted people to know about him. So trauma is profound, piercing, penetrating wounds that reshape body, mind, heart, soul, imagination, community, society. And we have to go down into the core of the wound, and we have to clean it out there. And if we're only responding to the symptoms to help people be better adjusted, okay, that's good, that's helpful, but that's not healing. And the wound will come back in some other way if we haven't transformed the way we carry it in our psyche.
That's beautifully said. Yeah, very, very heart-wrenching. And yeah, trauma should be mentioned is also like he's timeless with your relative. It's obvious. And it reminds me of the story of Bill W., the founder of AA. He went 50 years in recovery. On his deathbed, he asked for a drink because that drink, he was already, you know, he was already gone on the other side of the world, and he was full of pumped up drugs in his mind. I want a drink, because drink, again, is that one event for any alcoholic, that ultimate event of both numbing and trauma. So our minds will not forget. And I often talk, I call the listeners veterans of 1,000 psychic wars from the Blue Oyster Cult song written by Michael Moorcock, because he goes, the soldier's going, the war is still going on, dear. It's like not one day has passed. And we all have our wars, right, Ed? It could be when she broke our heart, when our parents neglected us, when we had an abusive boss. These things don't heal. And I think people need to understand it. But the good news is there is healing. I don't think the traumas go away. I think we want to integrate them, because these voices want a seat at the table. They want to be heard. They're still speaking to us. So we want to, as we want to bring in the gods to us, we also want to bring in the trauma, or childhood pain. They all want the shadow, they want a seat at the table because they want to be heard. They're like, I'm part of you, and I want you to understand my message and let you know that it's not your fault. That's important too, right?
Yeah, that's very important. In our culture, tragically for all of us, we hide our wounds from each other, and we try to appear clean and all put together and woundless and well-functioning. And that itself is destructive. It hurts us. Traditional cultures, and we both know and affirm this also, traditional cultures recognize and honor each other's wounds. For example, among the Native American cultures, warriors paint and dress their wounds and parade them in front of the tribe. Mm-hmm. They paint the scars on their war horses. So everybody knows this horse helped protect our people. This horse is one of us. When our veterans are on the streets wearing their old caps or uniforms. They're trying to let us know. They're saying, I'm a warrior and we're among you. Look at us. And there are also many of them are saying, you haven't recognized me and you haven't seen my wounds. So I'm going to display them until I get the support and recognition that I need. So back to Trump, PTSD. We know of more than 80 names it's had over the millennia. As we said, from Gilgamesh and the Bible and traditional cultures all the way till now. My favorite name is actually from the Lakota people. They call PTSD in their language, Naginapeapi, which means, you and I affirm this, the spirits left. They didn't say it's broken brain, we got to fix your nervous system. They say the spirits left and the warrior's spirit has to be restored. And then they had, as we both know and affirm, warrior societies where the warriors tended each other and profound rituals all the way through the life cycle that supported the warriors and kept them, supported them in being able to carry the traumatic wound without breakdown, but with honor. So all of that being said, I now translate PTSD since we have the acronym, we're stuck with it. You know, we go out for a cup of coffee and we hear people at the next table. Well, my PTSD is, and my PTSD is.
Yeah.
So it's become very popularized. And by that, it's been, on one hand, we hope people are recognizing how real it is. But on the other hand, it becomes trivialized that way. Taking it very seriously from the perspective you and I are sharing, I translate it as post-traumatic soul distress. Not stress disorder, soul distress. Everything we attribute to the soul is crying out in pain to be recognized, to be heard. And our symptoms, and Greek philosophy and Buddhism teaches about this also, don't mistake the action or the consequence for the cause. Our symptoms are consequences of our wounds, with a soul trying to express itself through the body. It's not, I have cancer because my cells went bad and turn it over to the medical system to just fix me physically, but rather, for example, with one woman I took to Greece on a Escapian healing journey, through her dreams in Greece, she realized she had breast cancer. And she had been saying when we went, I've got breast cancer and the doctors have to try to heal me. By the end of our journey, she said, I have a disease of love. And I grew the cancer in my body to try to express that spiritual wound that I have. And now it's not so much going back to the doctors, the medical system, as going back to my heart, my soul, my family, and trying to correct my damaged love relationships and give myself positive messages that love is rewarding, not toxic. So post-traumatic soul distress and post-traumatic social disorder. Because we've all got the wound, as you and I are both affirming. And because if we're talking about the military and warfare, anytime any culture uses its people and its resources primarily for death and destruction rather than nurturing and upholding and supporting and protecting, then we're all in social disorder, all of us. So we are. And if we collect all of the epidemic conditions of our country, what do you know? They're the symptoms of PTSD. Alcohol is abuse. Drug abuse, sexual abuse, child abuse, divorce, unstable employment, homelessness. That's the list of the symptoms of PTSD. So wake up, people. We've all got it together.
Yes, it's so obvious.
Yeah. When our eyes are open, buddy.
Yes. Yeah. And it's sad. You look at it with compassion. I don't want people to suffer because of they're stressed about the election or whatever. It's like, these are symptoms. You're in pain. and we want you to deal with your pain so you can find wholeness, then elections and all this other, you know, we'll take the right path as a people and as individuals, and it'll be completely new and beautiful. We won't have to worry about left, right, this or that. We'll take it. But I think what you said too is very important. And again, you talk about this in your book, is the myth, and I mean by myth, I mean fable, lie, that the mind and the body are separate is disappearing, thank God. And that's what the ancients knew, right? You say, yes. Harpocrates said it's one and the same. And the Egyptians and Steiner were right. Our hearts and our guts store memory. They store trauma. They store healing. And this is where we get these physical symptoms. So we have to get back to that. And you, like you said, the Greeks knew this, right?
Right, right. I'm going to briefly refer to one of my own healing experiences in this tradition. Please. Way back in my mid-20s, I was diagnosed with irritable bowel syndrome. Mm-hmm. And I've been working on healing it much of my life. Two stories about it. One is I was teaching an adult education class on ancient Greek medicine and healing. There was a medical doctor in the class. We were studying some of the ancient healings. And he said, oh, scientifically, that's impossible. Can't. Somebody can't be 2 years pregnant. As some of the healing said, somebody can't just have a dream and the spear that was in their shoulder was expelled just from seeing it in the dream. Not possible, not possible. So I went home from that class wondering, how are we going to address this and how can we demonstrate that those healings were actually case studies? They're actual records. Okay. The night I went home asking myself this question, I had a dream. Oh, and let's let our audience know, for those who don't, we are focusing not exclusively, but especially on the dream healing tradition from ancient Greece under the goddess Asclepius, who was the original physician. And this tradition was the origin of medicine and psychology in the Western world. So that. And a people had what Jung called big dreams. In this tradition, people went to temples and sanctuaries where the priests and priestesses gave them holistic modalities for health and healing. Then they did what they called dream incubation, which is like going on a vision quest. Mm-hmm. And you stay in incubation, sleeping, praying, fasting, meditating, until you get what Jung would call a big dream. In that tradition, it was from the god Asclepius or any of his helpers or demigods. All right. So knowing that, thinking about that, wondering what am I going to say to this doctor? I went to sleep and I had a dream in which Asclepius walked into my bedroom.
Wow.
And he walked up to the edge of my bed and looked down on me very kindly, smiling, eyes full of wisdom and beauty. And he said, so I know you've been calling me for a long time. Well, yes, master, I've been calling you. Thank you for appearing. And you've been asking for healing for your IBS. Yes. Do you have any wisdom for me? This is all in the dream. He said, yes. Take an enema of lemon juice and vinegar. In prayer, in ritual, give yourself this enema and that will help you heal. And then he left. All right. Next day, I called the doctor who said, this doesn't exist. And I said, guess what happened last night? And you're the medical expert. I'm the psychologist. Okay. What do you think? And he said, I've never heard of that for IBS. I said, of course you haven't. Came from Asclepius, not from medical research. So what do you think? And he said, to his credit, he said, well, you got to try it. We've been given this empirical laboratory test. So you got to try it. The only thing he said is, I recommend that you water down the enema, lemon juice and vinegar. That's intense acid you're going to be putting up inside you. So I did. And I set up a sacred space in my bathroom so I could do the treatment. So I had a statue of Asclepius and incense and candles, and I prayed, and then I did the enema. Oh my, I can't describe in words the exceedingly powerful sense of joy and lightness and well-being that flooded through my being when I took that enema. I felt things I never felt before. I felt toxins in my system that had been accumulating for years, maybe decades, being burned off. And it didn't completely cure my IBS, but significantly improved it. And it also changed my understanding of our disease processes in this way, because like most of us, I was thinking of irritable bowel syndrome as an affliction of the bowels. Right. Uh-uh. My affliction was irritability. My affliction is irritability, and I could work on that, and I could work with my wounds and which archetypes and traumatic wounds from my childhood and adolescence caused me to be irritable. The bowels were my body's target area for particular reasons of my life history. I could have put the irritability somewhere else, in my heart, in my brain, doesn't matter. My body mind system put it in my bowels for reasons I could discover, and I realized my affliction, the name of my God wound, is irritability. And if I work with it well, my bowels can be okay.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Okay. Well said indeed. And thank you for sharing. Graham, let's bring you in. What do you think? Do you have a comment or a question for Ed?
I was going to say, Ed seems to be echoing a lot of my sentiments where I have, mental health seems to exclude the spiritual element, in the mental health industry these days. And so many of the problems they're trying to deal on a mental level when it's actually a spiritual issue they're trying to deal with. And I was going to say, my take that I've developed on sleep is basically you take the body and mind offline in order to flash the BIOS. Make the updates you need to from the previous days while you interact with your unconsciousness. And the last question that I had for Ed is, while all war is traumatic, it seems like there's a difference in the trauma between what a just war, where the person actually feels it's legitimate and everything, versus something like Vietnam, where they don't feel it's a just war. I was curious if he had thoughts as to, the difference between those two types of trauma and how they're different as far as treating it. Hi, Peg.
Yeah, thank you, Graham. Those are really important observations, and I agree with you to a profound degree. Miguel and I would have to schedule another hour for this, which maybe we'll do in the future. What I'm going to say is, regarding just versus unjust, moral versus immoral wars and actions, you are so on target. And I've been leading healing and spiritual healing journeys to Greece since 1995. After 5 years of that experience, and I had confidence in leading pilgrimage overseas, in 2000, I began leading annual healing and reconciliation journeys to Vietnam. So I've been to Greece 25 times. I've been to Vietnam 19. Okay. I've researched with the Vietnamese people. I use these practices with them, and I use their spiritual practices as well. Right. So with the Vietnamese people, this is sounds unbelievable from our cultural perspective. The United States veteran population has post-traumatic stress disorder and moral injury in epidemic proportions. Most of the people who serve have it to some degree, and it's crippling and ruins lives. The Vietnamese don't have combat-related PTSD from our war with them. They don't have it. I've researched this all over the country. I've interviewed thousands of them. I've worked with their universities and their psychologists. I've been deep in the remote countryside where Americans have never been. And it's in significant part, Graham, because of what you said. They were defending their country. They weren't aggressing or attacking. It's absolutely true, accurate, that the aggressors get the traumatic wound far more than the defenders. And it's what we said about Aries and Athena. If you're like Aries and you want to harm, you're going to have severe PTSD and moral injury. If you're like Athena and you're withholding violence, trying to heal things through persuasion and diplomacy, and only need to take up arms to protect your children and your home and the homeland, and it's really justified, that is painful, but it will not necessarily lead to the traumatic breakdown we call PTSD. And we don't have time now, but the Vietnamese in Buddhism, as we mentioned earlier, Buddhism, Confucianism, ancestor worship, and animism are the four sources of Vietnamese spirituality. They all blend together in that country into a beautiful spiritual cultural tradition, and they live in it, and we share it and live in it with them. And there, too, our warriors' PTSD dissolves. So by now, 19 trips over there, I've brought about 200 to 300 Americans, at least half of them warriors. Scouts honor, more healing in 2.5 or 3 weeks back in Vietnam, reconciling with the former foe and making friends, than in 40 or 50 years back here with our mainstream psychiatry and the VA care system. As hard as they work to heal, it doesn't do it. It just brings symptom control at best. But we are all sharing, yes, we really can heal these wounds.
Thank you. That. Yeah. So the idea of a pilgrimage, this is the, what exactly does it entail? Because again, most people today, well, I can just sit there on my computer screen. Why do I need to go to Greece or Vietnam? What do you tell people? Why is this the soul's high adventure? Why do we have to go to these places?
Not only those distant places, but places on our mainland as well. Mm. I could tell another story. I will. I'm not going to tell this whole story. Miracle events happen when we are on pilgrimage in sacred places. One of the many things that happened to me in Greece was that I met a sea turtle on a mountaintop. It took me 3 hours to get up there by foot. And when I got to the sacred, it was a temple of Poseidon that was on the mountaintop, and a giant sea turtle came walking out to meet me.
Wow.
So miracles happen. And also when we're on pilgrimage, when we declare ourselves on a profound and sincere spiritual journey looking for new life direction. Among other things, when that happened was, and I was asked what happened and why. Well, I'm a Taurus, so partly I'm bullheaded with lots and lots of energy, and turtle was coming to balance me. You're getting older. You need to learn to move like a turtle. And it took you 3 hours to climb this mountain. How long do you think it took me, the turtle? I wandered through the turtle's mind. So I've used that image in my own endurance and struggles with life frustration. Took the turtle endless amount of time and effort to climb a mountain. That's the image, a metaphor for my life journey too. I ain't going to get up there charging like a bull. I got to learn to move like a turtle. Also, our friends probably know this, but I'm reminding everybody, we call this continent North America. The United States is on it. The Native Americans call this Turtle Island. Hmm. I was being told you left the United States to study how warriors can be healed and brought home successfully. Don't go back to the United States that doesn't know how to do it. Go back to Turtle Island and learn from the traditional people on Turtle Island. I did, and I did a 20-year apprenticeship with a Native American medicine elder, also to learn their spiritual practices for warrior and trauma healing. I think I was answering a question and lost my place. I'm sorry.
Yeah, the idea of a pilgrimage, but you did kind of answer. Oh, yes. The metaphor, okay. The symbolism.
That's it. So pilgrimage is an in-person, long, deep journey to a distant place that has been associated with spirituality for a long time, maybe for years, decades, millennia. Jung did teach us the archetypes have dried up in the modern era. What are the archetypes? And go to the places where they lived, where they were watered by people in the past, and where they're still alive in the people and in the land. So pilgrimage is a long distant journey with spiritual intention, seeking to answer really deep life questions for destiny and direction and or healing, where we turn off our everyday concerns and put ourselves in sacred time and space, and where we surrender to the journey and all of the experiences it's going to give us, whether with other people or with our dreams and visions or with a turtle on a mountaintop. And I can tell many other stories that we would call miraculous from my pilgrimages overseas. So I would add pilgrimage and cultural immersion as profound spiritual healing and growth practices. You know, people walk the Camino. People go on vision quests. There are many different versions of pilgrimage from the world traditions. And so I'm not saying which one to do, but rather do it. It will change your life. Let go of technology and be in direct contact with the energies. Take risks. And we can't. How shall we say this? Oh, it's one of my favorite quotes from a wise woman on a small island in Greece. She's not world famous, but she was famous, well known on the island. And she used Dionysus. She drank a lot. She said, miracles and fleas. We can't invite them. They come of their own accord.
Love it. Yeah, it makes perfect sense. Yes.
Hit the road and let the miracles and fleas find you.
Yeah, I think Graham went on his own vision quest. He must have inspired him. Hopefully he'll be back, or his Florida internet went out. But no, it makes perfect sense. And as I tell sometimes people, if you can't afford it, just walk out your door and just lose yourself in the nearest park or just... Yeah. You know, just you can make your own world. And I've always had this thing about moving to Virginia, and I never knew why. And then I realized, you know, I think it's because part of me wants to go to like Gettysburg or those areas of the Civil War where there's still a wound, there are ghosts there, you know, there is still unresolved events of our past. And I want to be part to sort of, you know, find healing, be part of it. You know, I think that will help.
It will help immensely, and thank you for bringing that up for our audience too, because it's being very honest, we still are in a civil war. We're in a civil war now. Blue and gray, blue and red, same thing. We don't understand. We're not listening to each other. We don't know each other's stories. There's the beautiful African proverb, my enemy is somebody whose story I have not yet heard. Americans need to listen to each other's stories and fears. When we're in Vietnam, I can't tell you and all of our friends out there how exceedingly beautiful it is for two people who were at war with each other, even in the same battle, even once trying to kill each other, to laugh and cry and hug and tease each other. I'm still alive because you were a lousy shot. Ha, ha, ha. And this is what they finally say, which is what Americans finally need to say to each other. The Vietnamese, these are quotes from Viet Cong veterans to our Americans. Of course you're welcome here. We want you here. We're so sorry you couldn't heal in America. We're so glad you came here to heal. And we love you. We are brothers and sisters who survived the same hell. And from now on, we need to become the lips and the tongue of the same mouth telling the world the same story. So trauma, actually, if we can embrace the wounds, can be a portal to the sacred. We're cracked open. The spirits want to get to us if we give them a chance. And it changes our worldview, and we can reconcile with each other and realize we are traumatically wounded in the same ways, and we can work together to heal each other.
Beautifully said. And I would certainly agree. And in your book, you also talk about, yeah, the Greeks understood the archetypes. They understood it in the Jungian way, that the archetypes are dynamic. They can possess you for better or worse. You got to be careful and so forth. And you equate the Furies with complexes, which I really like. But here's a sort of side question, Ed. What god would you equate with the shadow? Because again, something we in this country and personally, as we've discussed, facing our shadows, we're not very good as Americans.
No, we're that's an understatement. For sure.
For sure.
I would say that applying the shadow to the Greek pantheon is a little bit more complicated, because every god and every goddess has their shadow.
Shadow and dual aspect. Yes, yes, that's dual true. Aspect. Yes. Aphrodite is the goddess of love, but she's the goddess of war to the Spartans. So, yes, you're right.
Yes, and Aphrodite in her light side is goddess of beauty and love and sexuality and sensuality. Mm-hmm. My wife always says, yeah, Aphrodite's in me, but it's in my gardening. Keep it outside. And she does. She raises incredible wildflowers. So I'm grateful to Aphrodite bringing that. What I'm trying to wear. So the light side of Aphrodite is love, beauty, sexuality, sensuality. The dark side is possession by that archetype. So that becomes that's sexual abuse. Possession by your sexuality. So you've got a distorted relationship to Aphrodite. So I use that as one example. If I'm working with a person who has a pornography addiction or has had affairs, I'm not rendering it as pathological. I'm saying, let's explore together what's happened to your relationship to the goddess of love and beauty. Mm-hmm. How and where did it become distorted? And how can you work to restore a positive, fulfilling, respectful relationship to that archetype? And we can talk about that with every one of the gods and goddesses. So definitely. The shadow, everywhere we have a godhead, we have its shadow. And we have to see which is manifesting and rebalance it for the positive. You're right. We're not going to chase or eliminate the shadow. So we have to carry it in wisdom and balance and integrate it. And it will bring us wisdom.
Very true. That's really its job. If we just see it that way, its job is to integrate and make us whole. We can't just push and push these things down. So The other question I had for you, yeah, we're talking about war, and of course I'm thinking of Ares, as you said, and then I think of Heraclitus, who said war is God, speaking of the shadow side of Western man. Right. And obviously we can look at the German people in World War II, Wotan was allowed in, and all hell broke loose, and so forth. But I, in this show, I always say this is the age of Hermes, and I got this from Jungian Dennis Merritt, who said, no, we are in a transition place, and the door hinges belong to Hermes. The psychopomp must lead us through. It's obvious that the United States is going through a transition. There's something on the other side. There is a trickster mentality, from presidential candidates to crypto to confusion with medicine. I mean, it seems this is Hermes' playground, even though Ares, of course, is, you know, doing his thing over here. But would you not agree that maybe we should embrace more Hermes as we try to get to whatever we're going to be as the United States or Western culture in the next decades?
Yeah, I agree with that. I appreciate your offering an analysis, and would make it a little larger than what you shared. So let's remember, Hermes is the god of communications, and we've all become so dependent on technology. Yeah. And when we started today, my friend, Hermes was messing with us.
It's what he does.
So, right, that's what he does. And Hermes is a thief and the god of thieves. So He's going to cause trouble. And Hermes was the psychopomp, the guide through the underworld. Yeah. And just as we're both sharing, we are really in the American shadow in our underworld. And we really need hermeneutic help to understand and steer our way through and stop doing so much damage to each other. So very much this is an age of Hermes, and we are in deep confusion about how we're relating to his various traits and gifts, and working on that would benefit all of us.
Very true. And I should remind people that in Homer's epic, the two trickster gods, Hermes and Hecate, are the two gods that help without asking for anything in return, especially when Odysseus is in the underworld. So keep that in mind. The trickster will take care of you, and I think that's where we need to be. As we get to the end, do you have a few more minutes, Ed? I'm not sure.
Yes.
Okay, wonderful, okay. Wonderful. So the importance, I guess, and I hope this is not a loaded question, but I know people listening are like, well, I need this. What are the steps? How do I know I'm traumatized instead of, oh, the children drove me crazy today. I am traumatized. I have PTSD from this shitty movie I saw. And what do I need to embrace? Dream therapy? Or, I mean, what would you say to the layman coming, help me, help me?
Okay, good questions. As we have said together, our symptoms are soul talk. So really pay attention to what your mind or your body or your heart are doing that you're calling troublesome symptoms. And yes, we all need and deserve help. If you seek help, don't just go to somebody who's going to try to suppress and control the symptoms. Mm-hmm. No offense to anybody, but medications don't heal. Medications control and suppress symptoms. So in order to stay adjusted with it, we have to stay on the medication. You can use medications to be more functional. Certainly it can be helpful in life-threatening situations, but that's not healing. Back to our tradition. Our words, psychology, psychotherapy, psychiatrist, all come from the ancient Greek and from the Asclepian tradition. Psyche means soul, doesn't mean mind. Logos doesn't mean the order of the study. It means the order and meaning of the universe. Psychology is the order and meaning of your soul. Psychiatrist literally means soul doctor, psychiatros. Not medication dispenser. So be really wise and careful who you ask for help and how they're helping you, and seek people who can really help you hear yourself and your symptoms and how your soul is trying to talk to you. and what is the deep message coming that got embedded in your body from months, years, decades of life wounding. So, and use the arts. All traditions around the world have used the arts for significant culture of traumatic healing. The samurai warriors were also the greatest haiku poets and landscape painters.
Very true.
We could go on and on. So use the arts, watch your dreams. In this tradition, you can ask for healing dreams. You can incubate yourself. You don't have to go to Greece and do it in that big way, but you can put yourself on a dream healing retreat in your private space and turn off your electronic equipment and set your intentions and do intensive journaling work. And it's hard, but welcome your symptoms and your emotions rather than just try to squash them because they're uncomfortable, and really work on hearing what they're saying to you for yourself and for anybody you ask for help. Really practice and make sure they practice deep listening. The god of healing, Asclepius, one of his nicknames in ancient Greece was the listener. Mm. Most of our medical people aren't listening. They're collecting symptoms and throwing medications at us. So when you're sitting with somebody in a love relationship or trying to get help, make sure there's really, really deep listening going on. Deep exchange of what your heart and soul are really trying to put out.
I couldn't say it better, except for those of you, and I get this a lot, I don't have dreams. Of course you have dreams. If you have a soul, you have dreams. It's the real part of you. You are the tip of the iceberg. The dream world is the psyche and all that. And if you want to resist or get better at dreamings, you still have active imagination. You got meditation, hypnotism. There are other ways to bring, where, like you said, the soul to tell you what it needs from you to heal. And it has all the answers. It's very simple.
Yes.
Very simple. So like you said, just effing listen. Listen. Even if you go outside, the spirits are telling you, your ancestors are right now screaming at you with 1,000 messages and requests and things. It's all there. As I once said, sometimes I think enlightenment simply means listening. As you said, Asclepius, that's it. Listen. Yes. If the universe is made of information, as Philip K. Dick, then it can be said that information will save us. So... Well, as we are here at the end of an excellent, very rewarding conversation, Graham, do you have any last question or remark before we go on our pilgrimage or dream quest?
Just a couple last observations. One of them, I find it really sad that it's a much better business plan to have ongoing treatment with medicine rather than healing somebody once and be done with it. You know, that yes. I find sad. The other one is that, go ahead, Ed. Sorry.
It hides the profit motive. You're absolutely right. It's really sad. And there are powers that want us to stay on their medications for the rest of our lives and make their billions of dollars.
Yeah, profit motive should not be involved with healing and medicine.
Exactly.
Or war.
Yeah.
Right.
The other one is that whole, getting into, battling somebody, living because the person's too incompetent or too drunk, making up afterwards and laughing about it. That kind of sounds like a typical Friday night on an Irish pub. Hey.
Right. An Irish wedding, as we used to call it. Any fight. Yeah, it's crazy, but... Well, Ed, as we get to the end, I will, of course, have your website and your book link to on the show notes. I have it right here on YouTube, and we'll have it when the audio version is released tomorrow on all major podcast providers. And I highly suggest you get Ed's book. It's inspirational. It's personal. He gives case studies of the healing of many individuals and his own journey. It's got it all. It's got Jung, ancient Greek mysticism. It's got the whole nine yards. But anywhere else you want to send people, or any event you want to let people know about?
Well, I'm leaving for Greece again in 3 weeks. I don't have any more room in this next pilgrimage. It's full. But certainly if people are interested in traveling with me or with others, they can be in touch with me about that. I just encourage people to be on their true soul journey, whatever that looks like, however that feels, whatever tradition or imagery or aspects of divinity that they are called to, do it.
Do it. We all have a special purpose designed by our souls before space and time were even created. And it's an amazing mission, and it's a quest, and it's not easy, but we all have it. Nobody is better than anybody else. We all have a role in the healing, the tikkun olam of the universe. So I agree. And I didn't see any super chats. I see Francis of Sophia Klatt. Thank you very much for your support. No questions sold. I'm ready to go on my own pilgrimage. Awesome, Francis. Yeah, let us know where you go and what you see. Oh, the places you will go. But we are at the end. Incredible conversation. As I mentioned at the beginning of the show, when the tech archons were attacking, we will be getting deeper into the shadow this Friday with another show. So I hope you're ready for more healing and more exciting ways to bring light into the world. But Graham, thanks a lot for keeping us company today.
Always my pleasure. And I thank Ed for all the healing that he has given to others.
Agreed.
Thank you, Graham. And thanks again to you for the good work you're doing to make this possible. You are a servant of Hermes. Even though we're talking about getting off technology, we need you and Hermes to make the technology work for us. Thank you.
Hermes is my guy. He will always be my guy. As for our goddesses, it's Artemis. And I don't know why the most demanding goddess in all of the world decided to pick me, but you do what you do, right? Again, I'm just a vessel.
Just be careful how and where you look at her.
Yes, exactly, exactly. Those bear necessities. Because when she turns into a bear, it's over. So, awesome. Well, Ed, thank you very much for coming on the show. We look forward to our next chat. Good luck with your next pilgrimage. We hope that you can heal as many people or give people their soul history, as Hillman said, and you talk about, and it will be a better world. So, and for everybody else, thanks for joining us, and we will talk to you soon, and enjoy the rest of your moon day. Take care, everybody.
Now the guilt is all mine. Can't live without the truth. best. You can't forget love and pride. Because of that, it's killing me inside. Get the past. You can't forget love and pride.